listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 72. This minute begins with Yannick saying, "It's not safe down there," as they race back to the Prometheus, and ends with David gleefully exploring the Bridge of the Juggernaut. Vickers is suiting up and finally joining the action, and Ravel looks on at the video feed from the ground in horror. Ravel hasn't had much to do so far, and let's be honest, he never really gets much to do. It's a very irresponsible use of your Benedict Wong. Meanwhile, David is exploring what has been dubbed by some as the Orrery. Orrery. Fun word, just rolls off the tongue. The control room or bridge of the engineer ship, in other words. The term Orrery describes a model of the solar system, so of course, in this context, we're referring to the iconic holographic display soon to come. David squishes, yes, squishes some buttons. I remember some people thought the controls for the engineer ship were goofy, and yeah, big squishy egg buttons and a flute. It's comical. I think they could have done better. I'm okay with the flute, especially in hindsight, because of how that element is utilized in Covenant. Plus, communicating with machinery by sound or music is a novel concept. I can't really think of another example. I think maybe in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, I don't know if they were. That's how they communicate with machinery as well. I think that's just how they're communicating with human beings. So yeah, that's novel. That's unique. I like that. On the design, art director Arthur Max had this to say. "For the Juggernaut's control desk, we wanted technology that nobody had ever seen before. It looks like a Wurlitzer organ in many ways. The layout of all the controls is like a horseshoe, which is like a Wurlitzer, like you see in any old Art Deco cinemas. As for the shell-shaped chair, I talked to Stephen Messing about it being organic rather than mechanical-shaped, something elegant and derived from nature. He ended up coming with the shell-type shape, which was just a beautiful object. We built one overscaled for an engineer." As you see David getting into this chair, it's huge. Like, he's 6 foot tall, if IMDb is to be believed. And the guys who played the engineers are about 7 foot tall, but that's still big. So I'm wondering if this particular chair is just for David to look dwarfed in, and maybe they built another one for the engineer actors. But I don't know, maybe the actors are that big. There is an indie game in development called Scorn, which is inspired by the works of Giga. Go check out the trailer, it's incredible. I hope it gets released. This game shows a range of biomechanical devices and control panels, which I feel are more along the lines of what one would expect here. The engineer ship is a little too sanitized. That's what's wrong with it. I'd never really thought about it until I got up to these minutes and I really started focusing on the ship itself, and I just felt like it needs something else. It needs to be memorable, it needs more impact, it needs something. And looking at Scorn, that's what was missing. It needs to be disturbing. Beyond, you know, it's vast and dark and ancient, sure, but it's alien. Let it feel alien and scary and unnerving. So in Scorn, everything is biomechanical. You're not even sure what's alive and what's not. Reloading a gun even seems like surgery. Interfacing with a computer is penetrative. It's a violation of the body. That's what these prequels are missing, honestly. There is some biological horror and all of that, but not enough, or not consistent. There's not a base level of, in this world of the engineers, it should have this kind of biological horror aspect. At least that's just my opinion, and I feel like that could have just given it that extra spice, a little extra oomph. And I just think they played it too safe with the engineers, to be honest. The prequels are weird in other ways, don't get me wrong, but they've lost the spirit of Giga, and that's what's missing. You need Giga. That's what made the original Alien so impactful. And I know the designers were told to look at other art, like Gutelin, the Russian artist, for inspiration rather than Giga. They wanted to steer away from that, who knows why, but I think that was to its detriment, to be honest. In some ways, I think the look they've achieved in Prometheus is cleaner, it's newer, it's more futuristic. But that doesn't really make sense. For the Prometheus ship itself, great, go for that. But for this engineer ship that's been abandoned for like thousands of years, it should effectively look the same as the space jockey scene. And even if you look at Gudelin's art, it is creepy. It is existential and empty. And really what they should have taken from Gudelin is, because that's still biomechanical in some ways, what they should have taken from his art is the intricate detail he was able to make with 3D art as opposed to airbrushing, which was Giga's preferred medium. So, don't get me wrong, I think this ship is gorgeous. I think there's a lot about the engineer aesthetic that is appealing, but it's just missing that other element of the biological horror, the biomechanical, which is what drew me to all this in the first place. You know, I've mentioned I do have a space jockey action figure. I don't collect a lot of action figures, but I love that space jockey because that biomechanical stuff is so fascinating to me, where you just don't know where the mechanical and the biological begin and end. It's so perfectly fused. I mean, there is a biological element to this ship and this console, but it's in this sort of squishy, cutesy, cartoony kind of way. I'm not disturbed by squishy egg buttons. It looks like it's Fisher-Price's alien ship, you know? Is Cronenberg still working? We need something like Existenz or Videodrome up in here. That's the kind of thing I was hoping for. I think another problem is that I've had years to really imagine, what's this space jockey like? What do they look like? What does their world look like? What's their technology like? So seeing this, you know, admittedly beautiful, sleek ship with kind of weird Fisher-Price technology just wasn't what I had in mind. So I wonder, obviously art is purely subjective. It serves its function fine, but I wish it was more. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. And if it is biomechanical, seeing how an android would have to interact with that would be quite interesting and presents all these fun kind of challenges, and it puts forth all these new concepts. So yeah, it's fine, but it could be more. I think that's basically it. And looking at the original space jockey scene, the other thing that makes it so memorable and beautiful is how atmospheric it was. It's that those particular elements that Ridley Scott normally loves in Blade Runner, Alien. It's full of the dust and the fog and the moisture and all of that. And by comparison, the engineer ship just looks way too clean and shiny and new. It's supposed to be a haunted house in space. It's supposed to be a horror story. Is it not? I don't see where they're going with it. If I were to try to defend it, I guess this is supposed to be a prequel. It's supposed to be less horror, more space adventure. But it's still, it wasn't a PG movie. It was like M or MA, depending on where you are. So, yeah, I don't know. Try harder next time, guys. So these squishy egg buttons activate the chair, which pulls out. David takes a seat as gracefully as one can in something so oversized. He grins in a real, genuine, dare I say, human way. The only time he ever does so, as far as we've seen, he tends to smirk at best. He then notices the holograms coming to life behind him, and the minute ends there. I will give this ship points for the hologram idea. It is cool and helps to create the effect of a ghost ship in a science fiction context. For a film about seeking our origins, this is a way of animating the dead, and it's thematically perfect. Now I'm about to read the engineer's script, pages 70 to 75, Holloway's chestburster scene. So to recap, things are pretty much the same as they are in Prometheus, although events are in a different order. So Holloway fell down a hole, he was injured, unconscious for a period of time, wakes up, has this mark on his neck, doesn't know what that's about, he doesn't feel well. So he wasn't poisoned by David, which kind of changes David's morality there a little bit. And they've discovered some things, Watson slash Shaw and Holloway. So, getting into it. Holloway, the engineers aren't from here. This moon's just an outpost, abandoned. But if we follow that map, we may yet make contact with a living civilization. The location of the engineer worlds is the real prize. Next to that, Weyland's terraforming is chump change. We need to get the coordinates and keep them from the company. We have to play this smart. Waltz, all right. Two men dead. Vickers is jumpy. As soon as she gets what she wants, she'll take this ship home. We have to move fast. Holloway trembles, a sheen of sweat on his skin. Watts, we will. Are you all right? He's frightened, brazens through it, pulls her into his arms. I'm fine now. He kisses her. Bedroom. Holloway tumbles Watts onto the bed, pulls her shirt off. They struggle out of their clothes, clinging to one another. Holloway's ill at ease. Something's wrong inside him. He feels it. He dives into Watts as if for refuge. They make love. Sitting atop Holloway, Watts lays a hand on his chest. Watts, your heart's beating so hard. Holloway, that's your fault. Vulnerability in his voice, fear under the surface. He rolls on top of her, drives her into the mattress. She holds him protectively, not deceived by his bravado. Suddenly, Holloway tenses, muscles rigid, shuddering. Watts draws breath through her teeth with a hiss. Eyes open, her fingers rake his back. He screams, horribly, eyes bulging, tendons standing out of his throat. Watts jumps violently underneath him. He begins to convulse. She rolls him onto the bed beside her, trying to contain his spasms. His teeth grind. A horrible crack. In the middle of Holloway's chest, beneath the sternum, a grotesque head pushes out through the skin, a parasite. Blood fountains from the ruinous wound. Holloway goes into a massive seizure, violently lashing out. Watts stares at the parasite fighting its way out of his body. It is white and boneless, glistening. It flails its hideous, lunging jaw. Well, if it's boneless, how does it have a jaw? Explain that one, Spates. Watts screams and screams. The parasite frees itself from its savage womb and turns on Watts. She slaps at it blindly. It hisses at her. She squirms away across the floor, tangled in the bloody sheet. The thing comes after her. Corridor, tracking shot. Watts screams echo through the Magellan. Stillwell runs down the hallway, searching for the source. Scientist's cabin. The parasite chases Watts across the floor. She leaps into the clothes locker and slams a steel door. The parasite flattens itself. Slick as an octopus, it begins to slide under the locker door. Watts shrieks in horror. Stillwell bursts into the cabin, Yannick right behind him. Quick as a cat, the parasite darts to a floor vent and slithers bonelessly between the bars. Watts bursts out of the locker, naked and bloodied, rushes to Holloway where he lies on the gory mattress, a horrific hole in his chest. He is beyond all help. Yannick and Stillwell struggle to take in what they're seeing. Stillwell pulls Holloway's jacket off a chair, wraps it around Watts, pulls her gently from the bed. She looks at him, uncomprehending, shock setting in. Break room. Watts sits at the steel table, deep in shock. She wears an oversized crew coverall, her skin still streaked with dried blood under the fabric. A knot of crewmen around her, Yannick, Stillwell, Brick, Glass, and Downs. Yannick looks at Glass. Take care of her. Get her a sedative. Downs, get Holloway into a freezer. Everybody else with me. Interior, catacombs, darkness. A horrible sound of breathing, ragged and wet. In a corner, lit by a green glow from seams in the floor, a figure in a white spacesuit lies, writhing weakly. The insignia on the suit's chest plate reads Fifield. The suit's helmet is shattered. Inside the helmet, Fifield's head is a horror, a gelatinous mess, skin reduced to putty. The softened bones of his skull change shape as we watch, elongating. Fifield mews in pain. Interior, Magellan, Captain's wardroom. Yannick keys open the arms locker in his wardroom, unlocks automatic pistols from their rack one by one, and hands them to Stillwell and Kamarov. Hypersleep compartment. Holloway's body lies frozen in his hypersleep freezer, blue with frost, the horrific wound yawning in his chest. Watts enters, cleaned up. She opens the freezer. Her hand caresses Holloway's cold cheek tenderly, slides over his collarbone, lies flat on his chest above his awful wound. Gloss enters, reacts in dismay, tries to pull her back. You don't want to see that. She turns on him fiercely. I want to understand. Interior, mess room, Dawn. The entire complement of the ship gathers for an emergency meeting. Yannick at the head of the hall, Glass, Downs, Brick, Stillwell, and Kamarov seated with pistols on their hips. To one side, Vickers and Captain Shepard and Vigoda. Yannick. All right, listen up. I expect you all to know what centers. They all stare at her, knowing what she's been through. With averted eyes, she crosses the room, sits alone. We've got some kind of parasite aboard the ship. Vickers. I suggest you kill it. Downs. That's a bright idea. Kamarov. Show us where it is, lady. We just spent 5 hours looking for the damn thing. Watts. We found engineers who died like Martin. Silence. They all turn to look at her. Explosive wounds in the chest. Whatever killed Martin, it's the same thing that killed the engineers 1,000 years ago. Stillwell. Jesus. Watts. But not all the engineers died that way. The others were torn apart, slashed to pieces. A murmur among the men as the implications of that sink in. Even Vickers is disconcerted. Yannick. We're a modular ship. Self-contained, life support, and power in every section. I say put the ship in orbit. Vent every compartment to space. Sit in a vacuum at 20 degrees Kelvin for a week. Kill anything. Downs. Then what? Stillwell. Straight home, man. Vickers. This ship doesn't lift until our work's done. She joins Yannick at the head of the room. Shepard and Vigoda flank her, rifles slung. The soldiers scan the room, meeting each man's eyes. Quiet threat is unmistakable. Yannick. Are you serious? Vickers. We spent years and billions of dollars getting here. The technology we came for is in our hands. We just need a little more time. Yannick. We're barely here 3 days, and 3 men dead. Vickers. They were careless. Yannick. Careless? As the argument picks up heat, Watts slips out of the room. Excursion chamber. Watts, in a spacesuit, no helmet, opens Holloway's locker. She pulls out the spacesuit he wore on the last day of his life. Holloway, stenciled on the chest. Her fingers linger on its folds as if she could soak up some last trace of him. She pulls the tracking chip from the chest plate of his suit, plugs the chip into a map unit. The holographic map lights up. The legend in the corner reads, Martin Holloway. A wandering path shows Holloway's final exploration. Markers on the map denote his photographs, field notes, and scans. Watts touches a marker. One of Holloway's field notes displays. Holloway. 7 dead engineers all facing the same way. Going where? Jocelyn's right, we don't see the big picture yet. Another level below me, I'm going down. So as Niall and I discussed in a previous episode, this would have covered very familiar territory, and I'm glad that what we got was something new and subversive. The Trilobite was unexpected, and it also gives us a bit more diversity in the monsters we get, although I would say I wish we had more diversity in Holloway and Fifield's transformations, because Holloway, obviously, is killed before anything can really happen. It would have been nice to sort of see at least a bit of a hint at what he was becoming. Maybe he turned into what Fifield looks like, and then Fifield turns into that beluga morph elongated head monster that Ridley seems to love so much. I mean, all in all, this episode is really making me consider how much further they could have pushed things. They could have gone all out. I really don't see why, in terms of horror and gruesomeness, they couldn't have gone further. I really do feel like they were holding back. I'm thinking of, once I finish doing Prometheus by Minute, I would do a few special, I think I mentioned it before, reviewing other supplementary materials and content. But I also think it might be worth me just reading the script all the way through and then doing an episode where I'm just giving you an overview of it, because I'm starting to realize, while I am reading the script pretty comprehensively, I'm skipping over scenes where nothing really happens, but I'm giving you the most significant stuff. What's happening is it's kind of hard to keep track of the characters over the entire plot. We're only getting those little snippets, and it's hard to remember, especially at the rate I do these episodes, that, this character was doing this and that, like I just said. But when I started reading this part of the script, David doesn't poison Holloway. That really changes the context of things. So it would be good to just do that sort of recap, I think, of both scripts. And I might also do that before I go into Alien Covenant and then read the script as well, but just to give you an overview at first, because I think that might also be helpful for listeners where we're about, 40, 50 minutes into Alien Covenant and I'm reading a script, then you're like, oh, hang on, but then how does this fit into everything? You can just go back to that episode and know, that's how that fit into the entire plot. Because I'm definitely noticing, well, at least with Alien Covenant, it's one script, but I'm definitely noticing dealing with two drafts of the Prometheus script, it gets confusing. And in other news, my health seems to be really good lately. Just these past few days, I've almost felt normal, not as productive as I used to be and energetic as I used to be, but I'm actually able to sit up and do things, and writing the scripts aren't so draining. So I'm going to try and get back to a weekly schedule, maybe even doing two episodes a week. Yeah, we'll see how we go, but let's try and do one episode a week. It's weird because, I think I mentioned before, so I had Barmer Forest virus when I was 21, had chronic fatigue for 18 months consecutively. Then I had 3 years where I was great, felt really good, super active. And then I just pushed myself too hard, had a lot of things, a lot of deadlines, different projects I was working on, and got a cold, not even a bad cold. And then I've just had chronic fatigue for 2 years, nearly 2 years. Coming on November, it'll be 2 years that I've just been consistently sick and really sick, worse than the first time. So recently I got a cold, and I hadn't had any other illnesses on top of chronic fatigue, thankfully, in these past 2 years. And I was fighting that for about 2 weeks. Like, I only had symptoms, runny nose and coughing and all that, for 2 days. But for a week leading up to it, and a week afterwards, I was just wiped out. And now I feel really good. So maybe the cold virus fixed it? Honestly, I'd believe anything at this point. We don't know anything about our own bodies, and medical science is fledgling, to be kind. So yes, I hopefully will be able to get some more episodes out, and I'm actually feeling, actually able to think straight and feeling that passion for discussing this film again. Whereas before, I mean, I've always loved this movie, but there's definitely times where it's just, I can do it, I can make it, I gotta get the episode out. All right. That about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook, and on Travian Designs. Again, I've got more energy, so you can find my new photo shoot. I haven't done any modeling or cosplaying in a while, but I'm actually able to do it. It is Connor from Detroit Become Human, whom I named myself after. And I have also, if you look at my Instagram, Connor Coulson Prime, been doing a few other little projects here and there, doing more illustrations, I've just been doing a bit more art and stuff. So I'll get some Detroit badges out to sell soon. Also made myself a Robin mask, because I think I'd make a pretty good Robin, specifically Damian Wayne. So might be another costume I'm working on. As for the near future, next two costumes, yes, I have been promising this for a long time. We'll do the David EVA spacesuit, yes, and then Ozymandias, although not in time for the Watchmen HBO series, because I think that's coming out in about a month. Anyway, I think that's all you need to know for now.